Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Ty Boyd from Charlotte, but he still says he's from Chapel Hill, and a lot of people in Chapel Hill remember him as the guy who was the predecessor to our own Ron Stutz, who's celebrating his 30th anniversary as the morning man at WCHL. So, Ty, it must make you feel old to know that Ron Stutz is old, and he was just a kid when you left.
Wait just a second till I get my walker and my ear trumpet.
Your walker and your ear trumpet. All right. Well, Ron, why don't you say a word or two to Ty, and congratulations. And, you know, we're going to be celebrating your 30 years, but we're also celebrating the tradition of this station, and Ty Boyd's certainly a great part of that.
Well, let me just say that Ty was long gone when I came. But he has always cast a very big shadow over this whole place. As a matter, and I mean that in a good way, because he has always been one of the legends that I have had to try and live up to, and that is one thing at which I have failed miserably. I have never lived up to Ty Boyd standards. But seriously, he was the morning man here for a long time. Everybody still who was around at that time remembers Ty Boyd. And, you know, if I could be remembered half as positively as Ty Boyd is, then I would feel really good about my career.
Well, Ty, that's a hard...
May I respond to that?
Yeah, you respond and...
I don't know that people ever said, I was listening to Ty this morning. Back in those days, but I can tell you, everybody in Chapel Hill, they wouldn't think of saying, I was listening to Ron Stutz. They said, listening to Ron.
Listening to Ron. Listening makes to you, Ron. Not Ron Stutz, but they say, I'm listening to Ron.
Makes you really well, qualify as a legend there. And you join people like Dean.
Like
and
Dean
Roy
and...
Roy and Bill and Mike.
Mike.
And Anson.
Anson,
huh. and from out of the chat, Coach K in Sydney,
and Dean, yeah, and all of these people by first names, but Ron Stutz is at the top of the list.
Well, one could say the same about Ty, and you could also say it about a couple of initials, DG.
I was going to say, how about DG?
Not, I'm not in the league with you guys, but I'm proud that you all would think to mention me. Well, listen, Ron Stutz does everything at this station, including organizing his own 30th anniversary celebration. So I got to let him go, Ty. But
I can't take credit for that.
But to have be in the presence of you and Ron Stutz when we're talking about radio is a great privilege for me. So I thank both of you for the kindness and your inspiration.
You're a great role model for modesty, DJ.
And Ty's one of my heroes.
Ron,
just
congratulations.
Remember that.
All right. Well, thanks, Ron Stutz. And Ty, we got you on not only to celebrate Ron Stutz and the whole radio tradition here in Chapel Hill, but to give you a chance to visit with your many friends here. I mean, there are a whole bunch of us old codgers here who remember when you were there, and they look back and just can't believe that the time's passed.
Well, I must say, I've given this our conversation some good thought, not necessarily productive thought, but good thought. And I remember talking about that those names that you only needed to use one name.
Is that special to Chapel Hill?
Sorry?
Is that something that's special to Chapel Hill, or is that just a change in our culture all over?
It's the way I think about Chapel Hill. But there are names that you'd never have to give their last name. In those days, which were... I did mornings from 56 to 61, so that was about 6 years.
Big important years in Chapel Hill history, though. Yeah.
But if you were doing a Ron Stutz impersonation, you wouldn't necessarily have to say Kennedy when you said Claudia, or Campbell when you said Orville, or McClamrock when you said Sandy. Mm. And when you said the Chancellor, everybody knew you meant the current. The current person residing in South Hall.
You would not say the chancellor's first name. You'd say the chancellor. That would be an exception.
Yeah, that's right. You would call. But on the other hand, I would bet in Chapel Hill you refer to the president of the university as Erskine.
That is a change. I think you try to think about going backwards. Maybe there was a transition. There were people who referred to Molly Broad as Molly, and others as President Broad, but you go back to Mr. Spangler. Only his closest friends, I think, called him Dick, and I don't know about Mr. Friday or President Friday.
Yeah.
Some people now proudly refer to him as Bill Friday, but I don't think there was much of calling him Bill when he was in charge.
Well, I think each of those deserves, and we won't, but I mean each of those could deserve a whole book and a whole chapter in a book. But Wonder if it has something to do with the fact that, one, they're relatively uncommon names. I mean, a Bill or Joe or Jim might not do it, but, well, Dean and Roy and Mike and Hanson and, well, they're just names that pop out, aren't they? I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that it's a close-knit community.
Well, Ty, when you were here, how did they refer to you? Did they say, Ty, oh, I'm listening to Ty, or did they say, I'm listening to Ty Boyd?
Which cut of the...
Are they listening to that old...
town, yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to get into that.
No, they'd say, it was, of course it was Ty, and that's what you would hope for.
Well, is that your real name?
No, Robert Burwell Boyd is my real name, but Ty was a nickname I got in the 30s when I was a little wee boy and liked playing the baseball, and Ty Cobb had been famous in the 20s, they call me Ty.
So you're Ty after Ty Boyd. Ty Boyd. I mean, Ty Cobb is Ty Boyd.
No. Yeah, but I mean, it was just a nickname that I got, and it stuck, and it was easily remembered.
But from baseball. Did it come from baseball playing, or did it just kind of, that's my dog, Ty? How did it come up? That's interesting. You don't even remember.
I grew up in a little town in Harnett County called Irwin, North Carolina. And in those days, of course, you didn't have any other entertainment except each other. And so we played games all the time. And I liked playing baseball. So I think that's they just started calling me Ty.
It wasn't because you slid in to second base with your cleats way up high, aiming for the second baseman.
I think we were barefooted, except for the sand spurs in the outfield.
Well, it's an interesting theory, and I think we ought to check it. And I bet you people who are listening to us now will either correct us or reaffirm your theory that Chapel Hill is a special place by first names.
They'd reaffirm that.
And I have to say, you know, that the community in Chapel Hill and throughout the university community has got the highest regard for Erskine Bowles.
Oh, my.
But you are right.
Oh, my.
Everybody refers to him as my friend Erskine said, or my friend Erskine's doing. And that's a strength.
Everybody who's ever met him would phrase it that way, wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah. So why and the dynamics of that is a subject that we'll propose for study by experts in the communication field at Chapel Hill, and somebody can do a PhD dissertation on that topic.
One comment on that. Pat Boyd drives a 10-year-old car, and the reason she drives it, she likes the car, she's never worn it out, but it's got Erskine signs on the back bumper when he was running for the Senate.
Wow.
And so that's the way, and we loved him, and you know, we're very interested in his candidacy. Anyway, we identify her car by the signs on the back bumper, and we can spot it in almost any parking lot anywhere.
Well, I can Harriet Martin can identify with
really?
With that. She
yeah.
She kept that sticker on her car for a long time.
That's great.
Let's leave the topic of first names. I think we'll come back to it after we've thought about it and checked our, you know, what you do in the scholarly community of Chapel Hill is you lay out a sort of a hypothesis or an idea, and then you start checking it and doing your research, and you and I will do our research, and next time we get together, we'll find out whether or not we can confirm that. I want to take a quick break. I'm visiting with Ty Boyd. If you don't know who Ty Boyd is, he was the Ron Stutz before there was a Ron Stutz on WCHL. He's gone on to greater things even than that, and we're going to talk to him about that when we come back after this short break. Well, welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Ty Boyd. Ty, we like to think of you still as being a part of the WCHL and the Chapel Hill family, and sure enough, you are. But since you left Chapel Hill, you've gone on to do a lot of things, including being the morning man in succeeding Grady Cole down at WBT in Charlotte. But for almost as long as Ron Stutz has been the morning man at WCHL, you've been in business for yourself.
We yes.
But more than almost 30 years, right?
I mean, it's about 30 years. We've had a training company. You know, I also was a hired gun and kind of spoke around the world for wonderful clients that would then pat me around the world and visit places and make a little speech every now and then. But we formed a training company 27 years ago, and we've been teaching communications since then, what we call personal communications, relationship skills. You know, if I were going to a communications class at Chapel Hill right now, there's so many definitions of the word communications. And one is simply we communicate when we exchange ideas. We don't necessarily know each other, have any feeling for each other. We just exchange ideas. Or we might socially meet and greet and just say hello. But leaders and great managers and successful people in almost any walk of life are able to plumb deeper into the communications black hole sometimes to develop greater and deeper relationships. And I think that's where the payoff is. That's where the first name comes from. You know, it's not just that, but when we develop deeper and more meaningful relationship skills, we create a different strata of connection with society or with individuals, usually one at a time. So that was kind of what I was thinking about. Might share an idea or two on that.
Yeah, I do want to share an idea or two about it. One of the things that I'm curious, before we get to that, that I'm curious about, and this is just personal, tell me as much about this as you want to, but you got into this, I'm just guessing that it wasn't your life's objective, but what you found out was that you're a great communicator on the radio. This
not
is now. Let me just say this,
sure,
and then
sure.
This okay. is my hypothesis, and then I'm sure you'll agree with part of it, and we'll disagree with part of this.
Okay.
But is that you inspire people by your manner and your way of communicating on the radio, and so they said, we'd like to get Ty Boyd to come speak to our group, and you know a lot of us who are in the public eye get invited to make a talk. To a group, and we enjoy it, but we never get invited back. But when you made a talk, there was something that sparked, and you got invited back, and pretty soon you got to be in that elite public speaking community. And from that, you decided, I've got a skill set that I can share with other people at public speaking, and then that got into communications and teaching and learning leadership. How far off base is that?
Well, I'll answer it from not left field, but still in the playing field. But my answer to that would be that if we fire whatever our purpose is, as I say, is fire your purpose with passion. And if you do that, doesn't necessarily mean you will become a Willie Mays or a Tiger Woods or whatever, but you will be as successful at that as you possibly can. I mean, at least you have that possibility. And I think Sandy helped me, Jim Hebner helped me, you helped me to just, and Ron knows this, that if your purpose is on fire, you don't work. There's a little James Michener that I think is terrific. Could I quote
it for you? Yeah, keep going.
Michener says, the masters in the art of living, whatever we do, the masters in the art of living make little distinction between their labor and their leisure, their minds, their bodies, their information, their recreation, their love, or their religion. They hardly know which is which. They simply pursue their vision of excellence for which they have great passion, leaving others to decide whether they are working or playing. To them, they're always doing both. And I think that would have to be you. It had to be Ron Stutz. And I think it's the thread that's been a part of our life.
Well, following up on my question and your comment about if you're passionate, if you're following your passion in your work, then it's hard to distinguish between work and play or work and leisure, or it's just part of your life. But if I followed your life, I think those who knew you in Chapel Hill when you were the morning man and other things at WCHL would say Ty's passionate about his work. That's why he's so good at it. He loves what he's doing and he's doing good. If I know from the times in Charlotte when I listened to you when I was far away because of the strength of the WBT signal.
Yeah, strong signal.
That you were, we'd hate to see the, you know, if it was wintertime, we'd hate to see the sun come up because the station wasn't, we might lose you. But that
true.
You, even though you're getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock, whenever you had to, you loved what you were doing, or at least you projected it. It sounded like that you were enjoying it. And then when you became, as I watched you, became such a successful communicator from the public podium, man, it looked like you were driven by passion for that vocation and for that. And then as I've watched you teach and write, well, that's your passion. So when have you not had passion for your for what you were doing?
Well, here's what I think, and here's what you do very well. I think in the broader sense of communication, my feeling is that you can learn to do the platforming stuff. Not that I don't mean to discount it, but I think it's an easier set of skills to at least get in on the effective level. Maybe not the great level, but the good level. You can learn those skills. The toughest of the skills to learn is to listen.
Hmm.
And
it's a hard. It is hard
pursuit.
Yeah. It is hard. But now, how does that translate into being a good communicator from the platform? In the platform, you really have to perform, don't you? Don't
well,
you have to?
You're right. It is a performance. But let's just change one dynamic. If instead of being the speaker, you were the facilitator. In other words, you were doing what you're doing as opposed to being, there's a difference in being in broadcast role, being the host or the interviewer and the interviewee.
Right.
And the asking of questions and then being a powerful listener is I think that's the toughest skill.
Well,
No,
I mean, I'm a natural interrupter, and I have to just muzzle my. Have to muzzle myself because I get so interested. I want to move on too quick and not let my guest finish the thought.
I think that's we don't want to have too much silence in there, but silence is powerful, really. You know, pause.
Well, now I want to but this is your point. And it's the secret, let's just call it the secrets of platform performance that goes beyond the skills of acting on the stage. What I have seen from time to time are great orators who, because they don't have the skill that you just mentioned of listening and responding, they have a great speech. And you would have had to say it was the right speech for the audience, at least in advance. But once the speech got going or the speaker got going, it became clear to become clear to an observer that this speech is not right for this audience. And this speaker is not adjusting, is not listening, not responding to the audience. And you always seem to have your talk prepared, but it's clearly you're out there looking at your audience. You're watching how they're responding, and I bet you you're making a decision. My speech is just right for them, or I've got to change it a little bit.
You have to be a good editor, and first of all, you have to honor your audience, respect your audience enough to do your homework before you get there. And one size does not fit all. You're exactly right, and not that you. If I were doing 60-minute talks or 30-minute talks in a row for 5 different audiences, chances are there's some parts of that, that each one of those talks that I would use similar material. But how you, it's that 10, 20, 30, 40% that you create just for that audience. And that would be true if you went to a cocktail party and talked to professional, talk to a lawyer about a little while, talk to a housewife a little while, talk to, a teacher a little while, you might have a different set of facts and data. And some days, as some of my performing friends say, the angels just don't sing.
Well, Ty, but what about it when you're up there and you're giving your talk and you have done your homework, or at least you thought you'd done it right, but you look out there and it's not working? Do you just
they look at you like a tree full of owls?
Yeah. Do you say, well, this is just not going to be one of those days, or do you say, I gotta turn up the volume, I gotta turn it down, I gotta go back to tried and true? Or do you just keep going? You just get it out.
Monotony, anything done to excess will become monotonous. So whatever you're doing, as a general rule, change courses. Take a 90-degree turn. Tell a story. Pause and look. Change where you are. Take a different tack. Engage the audience in audience participation. You know, do something to break up what has evidently become less attractive.
What I want to do right now, what I have to do right now is take a quick break. I'm talking to Ty Boyd about all kinds of things, but right now we're getting him to teach us. We've tricked him into teaching us. We're getting some of the skill sets that other people pay thousands of dollars for. Ty Boyd and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. My guest is Ty Boyd. I'm talking to him from his home in Charlotte, but his heart, or at least part of his heart, is still in Chapel Hill, where he was this is not fair, but he was the Ron Stutz of his day back in the late 50s and early 60s.
That's the nicest compliment I could think of.
No, but Ron Stutz would just shut me up and say, no, sir, I'm living up to the tradition of Ty Boyd and the people who I follow. But it's a treat. We're talking to Ty about things that he's learned along the way and that he's teaching as a part of his business, which is teaching public speaking, leadership, communication skills, and the kinds of things that help us do better with the skill sets that have been given us. Ty, when you were talking about public speaking, you said that teaching the platform skills is easier than other things, and it just shot into my mind what I hear from many teachers of writing, our greatest writers who are also teachers.
Yeah.
And they say, I can't really teach somebody how to write in the sense of being a successful writer. I can do a great job of teaching them skill sets that will improve their writing and enable them to tell what they've got inside of them better and make it work. And I can give them rules to follow in that regard and suggestions and coaching on that. But what I can't teach them is that I can't teach them the story that they can tell or the passion that they have for their life that they will share. And it just sounded analogous that maybe I'm reading too much into what you say, that you can take some of us who aren't great on the platform and give us and coach us and make us better at that. But what you can't do, or what it's harder to do, is to change our soul. You know, we have to do that kind of. We bring a set of experiences and stories that are our own. Now, what about that? There's a question mark at the end of that.
Yeah, I think they're right. They cannot teach great writers. They cannot teach great writing. They can only teach the skills. And Is that
yeah, and that's analogous to when you're teaching public speaking, you can teach the skills. In fact, you can make people who think they're not great public speakers great if they've got some of the gumption, because you can teach them some of the things that let some of that stuff out and that they can share.
Yeah.
And great writing teachers can do the same thing.
Yeah, and we have those seeds in us. We have those seeds of greatness in us, and they're limited only by our identifying what particular tools work best for us. And if you take the same topic and ask three writers to write about it, they may come to the same conclusion, but their way of getting there would be entirely different. Some will write like a textbook, and for people like me, it would help me sleep better. But if they wrote the same material and wrote it like a novel, you see the difference?
You
have the same outcome, but you get there a different way. If you ask me to sing Lost My Heart or whatever it is in San Francisco, I wouldn't sound like Tony Bennett, no matter how much I love San Francisco. But if I sang it long enough, I might be passable at it. But we would both say that we loved San Francisco, but we'd get there a different way.
Yeah.
One of us would be remembered, and one of us wouldn't.
Well, focusing on public communication, public speaking and communication, when you're talking or thinking, and you and Pat are talking about the great examples of communication skills or the great example of a talk that got hold of you, you know, we see all kinds of examples in the pulpit, you know, in the churches of great communicators.
Yeah.
But I want you to, but we don't share those. You know, our minister, we don't get to hear the other ministers too much, but we do get to hear the politicians talk. Do you use any of the political leaders as examples of good communicators, or can you think of any, like among the current presidential candidates who have skills that are, or deficiencies that are instructive to us?
I'd like to...
Don't answer that question, do
no,
you?
No, I don't mind answering. It's been a couple of months now. I watched the presidential debates in both parties, and each has delivered a lot of presentations, so they are comfortable on stage. By the way, you don't get rid of the fear necessarily, or the nervousness, or the little anxiety. Helen Hayes said she threw up before every performance, you know, and she was pretty much a pro. And athletic performers will tell you the same thing: nervous before the game, and it doesn't make a difference whether they're Michael Jordan or the newest recruit at Carolina. The nerves go with it. But having said that, where are we going? I just got
who's the part of it. What can we learn?
Presidential candidate.
Yeah, what can we learn from them to do or not to do?
Well, let me go to Hillary for a second. Now there's a name. You don't say Hillary Clinton. You say Hillary.
Right.
She's Bill. She's as bright as her husband, whom Greenspan says he's the brightest president ever. This is not politics talking, it's communications talking. But she doesn't have that warm relationship kind of, it's not necessarily her fault, it's just a different style. So I would say she's bright but not as effective on the platform as her husband, or as from the senator from Chapel Hill, who's a very effective presenter.
Well, what?
Obama is a very effective presenter. So the top three, I think she probably comes in third as communicator. She's certainly right there at the top. All three of them are very bright.
No question. No question about intelligence factor in those candidates.
All three of them are very, very bright.
Now, what bringing Hillary Clinton's husband back into it, are any of them in a league with him in terms of combining intelligence and warmth as an effective communicator?
Well, all things being equal, we'll vote for the one that we like the most, and warmth is how you translate like for the most part. So I'd say it's a definite asset to a candidate who has that warmth. Roger Ailes, who's a big who coached George Bush Sr., coached Ronald Reagan, may have worked with George W. He says when you go into the voting booth and all else is equal, you will vote for the one who has the most likability. So that relationship skill is powerful. Looking at the Republicans, just real quickly, Giuliani has a certain wonderful quality about him that makes people say, I'd like to hear more from him. He talks real stuff.
It's not exactly war.
That just before 9/11, he wasn't very popular as a communicator.
Yeah.
So both circumstance and I think defining his skills has helped him.
I apologize for it, but it's not warmth from Giuliani, but there's something that is engaging about him that is it's kind of like, I'll protect you, or, you know, I like you. Don't get too close, but I like you, and
that's right.
Can count on me. But it's not exactly Roger Ailes' warmth, but I don't know what it is. It's a puzzle. And you keep going. I apologize for interrupting.
No. McCain, I think, we love McCain for his service to America. We love McCain because he's kind of a loose cannon sometimes. He's loyal to a constituency, certainly in some issues. I mean, he's changed a good deal since the last election. But anyway, he's thought of with warmth. Fred Thompson's an interesting guy, although I have always thought, you know, we called Reagan a great communicator, and a great deal of that was his platform skills. Most of that was his platform skills. When he was the spokesperson for General Electric on television, there was nobody that could come close to Ronald Reagan, and he was a gentleman, and he had a respectful air about him. And you never heard him or saw him stoop to less than... your respect for him was high, and he was a great communicator.
Well,
Thompson, I'm not. Thompson's very popular. Looks like he's going to do well in South Carolina. But I'm just my own blinders, of course. But I'm thinking about communication skills. He has all the tools. We'll see how well he does.
Yeah, I think that's. Listen, you and I have to take a break, but we're going to come back and talk some more about great communicators and what. You've learned from them.
Okay.
Ty Boyd, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Ty Boyd, who's teaching me. Ty Boyd, a former morning man for WCHL, longtime radio man, and then longtime teacher of communication skills, including public speaking skills, and in the pantheon of great national, international public speakers, shares some of his some of the things he's learned and some of the skills that have enabled him to reach the top with the rest of us. And Ty, how generous you are to do that! I really appreciate it. We could talk politics. Well, let's do talk politics for just a minute more.
Well,
you just strive to be fair-minded and objective as you watch politics, but you care about it. And I wonder, as you've watched national and state politics, as some of our political leaders have disappointed us by their conduct, by their, you know, by getting off track, has this worried you, or are you just think this is part and parcel of the way democracy works?
Well, of course it's worrisome. And I always, not that I'm making sweeping statements, but all, you know, I think power sometimes is very corrupting, and it's an addiction just like alcohol or drugs could be. So I can see how people how it's very tough to get a real normal view of life when you're in a position of power. And we see CEOs and people in high places, politics or whatever the measure happens to be, who become slaves to excess and ultimately get in trouble.
Anybody really disappoint you?
Oh, I'm...
Or...
Well, I probably could, but I'm not. I'd rather not talk politics in that. I'd rather just look at their communication skills.
All right. Well, who are your heroes in communication? If you had to And you don't have to list them in any particular order, but and you don't have to be comprehensive. But give us a few illustrations of people whom you go to as your models for folks who are great communicators, well, either dead or alive.
I remember, I've tried to do a little litany of this, and I just do it real quickly. But JFK, well, let's go back. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, led a nation from the deepest depression it had ever experienced, and led it through a whole decade, well, two decades of pulling up by the bootstraps and becoming the dominant country in the world. JFK sent a man to the moon, inspired a whole country, a world, I guess, in the time of social chaos. Martin Luther King brought citizens who were, and still are in many respects, treated as second-class citizens, or too often are. But he, look what Martin Luther King did. This was communicating, powerful communicating. Ronald Reagan changed the whole way we did business in America, or did politics in America. Clinton did the same, particularly in his first when he came in the first term. He was, there was sweeping things that were happening. I don't mean just to be a Bush basher, since it's popular maybe in some circles, but he's my president. Yet I think he's not an effective communicator, and I could probably say a few more things that weren't nearly, weren't the way I'd like it to be.
Yeah. Well, what about non-politicians? Are there, we got this great local pride in Billy Graham, and do you agree that he's one of the great communicators? What have you learned from him that you could transfer to the rest of us, or is it just a gift that you that the rest of us can't have?
He has always been a shining example for us, and they must have had things happen in their family that weren't as wonderful in storybook as we'd like to hope they would be, but that's not the issue. The issue is he was a powerful communicator. He brought millions of people to the Christian faith and kept a lot of us in line who might otherwise have stepped further afield. And so Billy Graham, an incredible community, is to this day, and has written a new chapter in Christianity and probably seen by more people. Let me not overstep, because the 150 cable channels around the world give you a lot of exposure. But I knew Dr. Peel, worked with him a lot, Dr. Norman Vincent Peel, Bob Shuler, Crystal Cathedral. Both of them have seen a lot of people and affected a lot of people for Christianity. But clearly the leader in that hierarchy is the one and only Dr. Billy Graham.
Well, Ty, we only got a minute or two, but one of the things that I missed that I really wanted to talk to you about is your movement and focus on sort of non-platform communication skills relationships. And in a word or two, we'll come back and do this another day, but just give us an introduction to that.
Well, I think the most powerful, Dale Carnegie said it best when he said, you'll get more friends in 2 hours being interested in them than you will in 2 weeks trying to get them interested in you. And I think that's the greatest of all relationships.
So when you go to a party, you talked about cocktail parties. Do you go and make it a point just to say, what are you doing? Tell me about you. I mean, how do you do that?
I try. I'm very eager to tell everybody all about me if I don't like it.
Me too.
And I think I would hope maybe I'm not the only one who's that way. But no, Pat and I kind of think about when we're going to a party who we might see and have some kind of interesting question for each person.
See, in advance, you're thinking of this.
One of the great skills to have is just to have those quick access questions.
What would be an example? I just got a second or two. Give us an example of a quick access question.
What's your passion? What's your favorite cause? What was your first job? Tell me about your favorite grandparent. And they have to, by the way, be meaningful questions
right.
to that person.
Not cookie cutter.
But
those are a good example. Golly, Ty Boyd, hate to interrupt this great lesson, but the bell has rung. And we have to leave this class well before we'd wish, as right. always when we talk to you.
Single, may I use a single name quickly?
Yes.
Please say hello to Sandy and Bette, to Jim and Pam, and most of all, to the incredible Ron Stutz.
Man. My guest has been Ty Boyd. Thanks, Ty. Thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.